generating them internally so they can pay their debts within the interbanking system does not show and prove that the monetary system that they've created is insolvent, incapable of internally generating sufficient income to pay its own debts to itself. Okay? That's their fail. That's their fail. So every time they speak up, I'm going to speak up. And I'm going to tell them, you know, hey, if you do this, you might live. But if you don't, when it all comes down, you're all going down. So the biggest bankers have the most to lose. And that we have an orderly transition out of, quote, capitalism into, quote, democratic money, that without it, just like the economist sent it to FDR, you're not going to save capitalism without having public money, without having debt-free money, without creating a means of exchange that can be utilized without debt. So I'm not afraid of that discussion at all. I'm encouraged by the potential that it gives us, you know, to move towards having a better understanding of things. But the monetary system is bankrupt. When I say bankrupt, I mean insolvent. Bankruptcy involves solvency and insolvency, but the money system is insolvent. There's too much debt and not enough money to pay it, period. Okay, and who holds the biggest amount of debt is the biggest bankers. So if they want to live, they're going to have to figure out how to get to their next lifeline. And to me, their next lifeline is through public money. Over.
Write a letter to the bankers, Joe. That's great.
Kevin Stack.
Say it again, Stephen.
I thought that was great, Joe. Maybe you ought to write a letter to the bankers.
We may get to that point.
I'm sorry, Rita?
I'm nothing. Kevin's on stack.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, well, you know, the system is insolvent, as Joe says, but it's insolvent from the beginning. It begins in insolvency because they loan money that doesn't exist and they expect payments from money that doesn't exist. You're supposed to pay interest on these banker debts, and there's no money to do it. Plus, anytime any money goes into profits or savings or anything that takes it out of the circuit or the circulation for interest payments, then automatically it's in a problem. You know, I wrote that whole article that everybody got so upset about with the euro dollar, and that's what it's about. The bankers loan, they create all this debt, and then they slow down, and now nobody has enough money to pay the debts. Surprise, surprise. So, you know, I can't help it if the financial people on Wall Street don't understand what they're talking about and are continually mystified by the monetary system, but they are. But, you know, I want to second what Joe's saying, in a sense that we should be blaming the banks, we should be critical of them, and you know, this is the time, and Eugene, I want to second Eugene's sense that this is the time, because it's just like the greenback. Why was the greenback adopted? Because there was no choice. They were at the end of their rope. So, you know, the power players and the political elites that feed off of the Wall Street system, they're not going to let go. But right now, they have a hard time hanging on. So maybe we could shake them loose and get a little uprising going. So, I mean, you know, I also really admire Eugene's, go get them attitude. So, but I kind of want to agree with everybody, because so far everybody's saying stuff. I don't think we're disagreeing here in this group, but there's so many things to say, and the understanding of money is so, what's the word for it?
Complicated.
Huh?
Complicated.
Complicated. You know, it can be said in so many different ways, but we all do kind of, you know, people do kind of come to the same basic sense. So anyway, over.
Eugene Stack.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I would like people to read aloud my document, that is the cover letter that I sent out about 9:04 tonight, because it would help me better clarify what needs to be in that letter. And secondly, I mean, Rita's going to review it and rewrite it, etc. But I think it has the essence of the arguments that should be made to the mayors. And other people may have key additions. And since we're deeply into it, because if it's just tomorrow and we don't have mutual feedback, I don't think we will learn as quickly people's gut reaction to it. Over.
I'm willing to do that. Rita doesn't much want to. What do others think?
I'm not sure what document is. I didn't.
It's a three-page letter, but it's very large print. It'll take about 3 minutes to read. It's the letter that Eugene proposes sending to the mayors.
Should we do it now? Is the proposal to do it now?
That's the question.
Sorry.
Yep, that's the question.
I'm okay with. I can do it now if people want to.
Sue
Stack. Sir.
Go ahead, Sue.
I'm a little confused because one of the issues we've been discussing is what our strategy is going to be. So until we decide that, I'm not sure about what Eugene has written.
I think possibly the idea is that the letter is an introduction to the strategy, and it sort of, it bears on our strategy decision. But I'm not arguing in favor of reading it. I'm happy either way, depending what others want to do.
But what is our strategy? We haven't decided.
That is correct. We're working on it.
But when you read the letter, you will sense what I think the strategy is, and then you could say, no, that's not the strategy. We should be doing this. Over.
Joe Stack.
Joe, what do you think?
I just want to be sure that I understand what Eugene is saying, that he feels that if we were to read it aloud, that we would get through it with an understanding, a better understanding of where he's coming from and his approach.
Right.
To the mayor's group. Is that right?
Yes.
Rita Stack.
Go ahead, Rita.
I just pulled up Eugene's letter here. It's not 3 pages long. It's just a little over one page.
Oh, it's okay. I got a different screen format here then. Yeah, it's not long. Is it about 2 minutes, you think, Rita?
Well, maybe 3 or 4. Maybe 5. I don't read fast.
Well, I think reading this letter would allow us to have a stronger basis for telling Eugene and Rita what the group wants from this.
Well, you know, I think one of the things, if before I read this or whatever we do with it, one of the things we talked about was offering to do a presentation or whatever, educational type presentation, if somebody wanted more information and whatever. Isn't that one of the things that we had talked about before?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But I agree with Sue that we're going to have to make up our minds.
Well, let me read
just the greenbacks or the whole enchilada.
Well, I will read quickly here what Eugene has written, and then, you know, you'll definitely have an idea of where he's coming from, and then we can maybe take it from there.
Everybody agree?
So we're gonna read it to ourselves?
No, Rita's gonna read it out loud.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. It says, congratulations on forming mayors for guaranteed incomes. This is especially needed as Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans have decided to go on vacation till early September, 3 weeks away. Delayed will be CARES 2, no aid to states, municipalities, and the post office. No legal eviction relief and no supplemental unemployment insurance relief until September. Estimates of the U.S. getting back to normal have been moved from 2022 to the new estimate of 2024. The Center for Budget and Policy Priorities estimates COVID-19 fallout will cost $555 billion to states and municipalities. unlike most of the aloof members of Congress, mayors daily see the plight of unemployed, underemployed, and low-wage Americans hammered by an economic crash triggered but not caused by COVID-19. Your solution is bold and unorthodox, but funding is the obvious stumbling block. You desire to create guaranteed income funds from wealthy individuals and charities. This is an honorable goal, but the current need is very deep and widespread. Tens of millions need a lifeline for at least 6 months and probably 1 year. This lifeline should not be $1,200 one-time checks, but with something approaching $2,000 a month, $24,000 a year. The total cost would be $500 billion to $1.2 trillion. Only the federal government can supply such amounts. Greenbacks can supply such emergency. No debt, cash, as Lincoln proved in winning the Civil War. An economist.
That's a subtitle? That was a subtitle?
Yes. That's a new title. Greenbacks can supply such emergency. No debt, cash, as Lincoln proved in winning the Civil War. As economist John Kenneth Galbraith said, the most important history is the history you do not know. Lincoln faced an existential crisis in 1862 after suffering numerous battle losses. Wall Street was demanding as much as 30% interest on loans, and they could not supply enough cash. Reluctantly, Lincoln turned to the head of the House Ways and Means Committee, E.G. Spaulding, a banker from Buffalo. The U.S. Constitution states, Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof. Today, Congress has refused its constitutional duty to issue no debt currency. Instead, Congress allows Wall Street to create money as bank loans and then borrows this money from Wall Street and thus pays interest on it. Of course, the government does not pay this interest, but taxpayers do. Interest on the national debt is now $450 billion a year, second only to the Pentagon. Congressman Spaulding realized that U.S. government could issue no debt greenbacks bypassing Wall Street. He guided it through Congress, and Lincoln, in desperation, agonized, but signed it into law. $350 million in greenbacks paid for soldiers, salaries, equipment, armaments, and it won the war. This little-known but historical example is described in 25 pages of Chapter 17 in The Lost Science of Money by Stephen Zarlenga, with a link. Next subtitle. Greenbacks can be created today as we face a deep crisis, as Lincoln faced. Even before COVID-19, tens of millions of Americans were unemployed or living paycheck to paycheck. As many as 40% of the population did not have $300 to cover a sudden emergency, and as many as 60% did not have $1,000 in liquid cash for an emergency. These people would spend guaranteed incomes as soon as they get them, thereby kickstarting the economy, saving those companies capable of salvation, and creating the revenue for new local startups. Let fund spending by needy workers to determine which companies survive, not subsidizing corporations justified by the myth of trickle down. Okay, that's it.
Kevin Stack.
Kevin.
Well, you know, I think the gist of the letter is very good. But I think that somebody needs to go back and, you know, make sure we have all correct grammar and, kind of work on polishing it. But I like the gist of the letter, and I think the flow of ideas in the letter is basically right. Over.
I agree.
Me too.
Steve Stack.
Steve, go ahead.
Yes, of course, I find it
easier to comprehend it if I read it, but I'm just wondering if it, a little more tweak about something about the greenbacks being legal tender or somehow that defines them as different from the bank money a little bit more, that they weren't promises to pay, they were actually legal tender or something like that that pulls it out a little bit more.
Thank you. Very helpful.
Joe Stack.
Not debt money.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Joe?
Yeah, I want to update Eugene on the amount of greenbacks issued was actually $450 million.
Okay.
In total.
Thank you.
Kevin Stack.
Kevin.
Does Joe happen to know what percentage of the money supply in 1864 and 5 that, you know, that's when, or whenever was it that he did that, 1863? I don't remember the year that it
was. I don't know exactly the percentage, but I know that according to the figures that I've seen, it was the majority of the money in circulation between the banks and the government. The majority was, at $450 million, was government money.
Boy, that's an important point if we could substantiate that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll try to come up with something on that, but I know that I've seen those figures somewhere. Over.
Kevin, an important point you're saying, because by comparison, $1.2 trillion at this time is not, it's still not any kind of a majority of our money at all.
Correct. I think that's a very important thing to be saying.
Why?
And, you know, right.
What is the particular importance of it? I'm sorry to be so...
Well, we are sitting here, what do they call it, brainwashed, I think is the term, because here the Federal Reserve comes up and says that the banking system needs tens of trillions of dollars so that they can, you know, bail out...
themselves,
and yet we are saying that, well, the banking cartel gets tens of trillions of dollars, but we can't afford $1 trillion. You know, we just and besides that, you know, it's where does it all come from? I mean, the Federal Reserve notes are legal tender, and that is, you know, that's the one of the most important things about them, is they just trade off the government. I mean, it's just all, how do we appropriate government powers to this small ruling elite? So anyway, but we're brainwashed. We accept it. We think that when they do stuff, it makes sense. And if we want to do something, that somehow it's out of bounds. Over.
Sue Stack.
Go ahead, Sue.
So I'm looking at a volume called Monetary History of the United States, 1867 to 1960 by Milton Friedman and Anna Swartz, which is a very reputable, they kept track from 1867 through 1960 of what the composition of the money was. So on page 17, they have composition of currency and commercial bank deposits, end of June 1867. That's when they started. So, I don't know. Maybe I can scan it and send it and people can look at it. But the total of all the different kinds of currencies, there were all different kinds of currencies, was $979 million, of which $372 million were what we call greenbacks and they called U.S. notes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
370 out of 940, you said?
No.
979.
The total of currency was 979 million.
980. Okay.
And greenbacks, which they call U.S. notes,
yeah,
was 372 million.
Maybe we should call them U.S. notes in the letter as well.
Oh, great, great suggestion.
And they have another total here of adjusted commercial bank deposits, in addition to all the different currencies.
Uh-huh.
The total for adjusted commercial bank deposits is 691 million. And that includes national bank deposits and state and private bank deposits.
So it's like almost 17 million total in money out there circulating, if you count the bank deposits plus the currencies.
No, that wasn't all circulating. Of the 979 existing currencies, different kinds of currencies, 570 were held by the public.
What does that mean, held by the public? That doesn't mean
circulation with the public. So if you add 570 of currency held by the public and add the 691 of deposits in the banks, you get total currency and deposits are 1,261,000,000.
That's circulating.
Well, yeah, because it's the current deposits much they're circulating, and the currency in the hands of the public.
Sue, what about the difference between the 980 and the 570? Where's that money sitting?
They have held by the banks 247 million. And held in the Treasury of the United States, 162 million.
Okay, thank you. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Just that.
So the circulating currency, there's 1,260,000,000, and by comparison, there's 370, almost a fourth, a small fourth of that amount is greenbacks. Are the greenbacks included in that circulating money, or are they separate from it?
Say that again.
Are the greenbacks, the 370, is that included in the 1.3 billion circulating, or are they separate from it? There must be included.
Of the 372 million greenbacks, U.S. notes in existence.
Yeah.
319. Were public.
I see. Okay.
And 50, you know, it's a little confusing. They have two columns here. Okay, public, held by banks, and Treasury. So, U.S. notes, total 372 million. Treasury, of that, 53 million.
Read a stack.
Held by banks. It's unclear what is held by banks, but public, in the hands of the public, 319 million U.S. notes.
Okay, I think I
scan did. This and send it out to everybody.
Yeah, thank you. Joe is on the stack.
I was asking you to do that because it's just, you know, it's too much trying to make sense of it.
Okay, Joe's on the stack, and then Rita.
Yeah, I just want to make, you know, a couple observations about the fact that figures lie, I guess I'm going to put it that way, because, you know, we know that in 1865 there was $450 million of greenbacks in circulation. Now, when I say in circulation, what do I mean? I mean they were printed and they were paid into the economy. They were in circulation. That's how we got to the number. Okay, 450 million. And I think that the numbers that when I did the comparison was on the basis of 1865, that is to say, on the day that we had the most of it out there compared to the rest of the money. Now, what can happen to the greenbacks? Well, what can happen to the greenbacks is people can use it to pay their bills, and then it goes into the banks. Okay, now is that held by the public, or is that held by the banks? If it's held by the public, is it circulation? Is it held by the banks, is it in circulation? So in other words,
okay,
the definitions and the classifications of the money here are, in my opinion, very misleading and very unclear. And to me, how the learned Friedman's and Schwartz's can say that there's only $372 million in circulation, in existence, without saying what happened to the other 70,
80,
yeah, whatever, million is missing. You know, where'd that money go? The money was going to remain in circulation. It has to be in somebody's hand, in somebody's pocket, or in the storekeeper's, cash register, whatever. But I'm just saying that I don't see right here a good enough basis. When I looked at it, and I saw what the money supply was at the time, it was 450 million versus about 900 million. So it was about 50%. In fact, it was just a little over 50% when I looked at it, was the majority of the money. So I just want to put that out there to you for everybody that's trying to get a handle on it on the basis of these pages for later on. Over.
Yeah, Karen's
done. Thank you, Rita.
Yes?
Were you on the stack, Rita?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, Karen's, I wasn't. Stack.
Okay, Kevin's on the stack, and you know, now it is past our second hour, so we gotta be paying attention to the time as well as the excitement. Go ahead, Kevin.
All right, I'll just be really quick. I just want to know, Joe's argument about the figures is one thing, but I don't think it diminishes from the point that the greenbacks were, and we could say a figure like in excess of one third of the circulating currency at the time they were issued, and it was the reason that the United States survived. And so now to talk about guaranteed income at a $2 trillion thing being what, 5% of the circulating money, 2.5%. That's a very important point, that it puts it in perspective. So I don't know that we need to argue about the exact percentage, but just
I hear that.
That it was a significant part, and not just a large part, but I mean a big part. That's why the Yankee economy continued and was prosperous, and it was also legal tender money, which is a very important point, because the Confederates tried the same thing, but they didn't use legal tender money, and so it didn't work. Okay, over.
Okie dokie. So are we going to have any closing comments about this letter and what it means for our strategy with the mayors, or are we just tired enough to let it go until next week?
Kevin Stack again.
Kevin.
Okay, I hope somebody will team up with Eugene and rewrite the letter. I mean, I like it. It just needs, it needs an English major to go and get it, worked up. That's all.
Are you settled for a German major?
Yeah, a German major.
It is in Rita's hands now.
Okay.
Sue Stack.
Sue?
We still haven't dealt with the issue of the strategy we're taking.
Aha. Uh-huh. I'm with you, Sue. That's a pending thing right now. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Eugene Stack?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eugene.
After this is polished by Rita, and I'm going to submit to her a revised version from the Green Pages, which is an explanation of how greenbacks would work. I think in the next week, before our next meeting, I would like to see three mayors receive that. That is M. Tubbs, and the person in Jackson, Mississippi, and the one in Holyoke, Mass., and see if we get any feedback, which would be helpful in discussion of where we go and if we tweak the material prior to sending out to the other 13, et cetera. It would just be a test case. Over.
All right. I want to ask if I like this letter too. I agree with Kevin. The ideas flow. It's got pertinent stuff that is going to easily capture the attention of the mayor and feel relevant. Yes. But I do feel like if we don't bring in our whole plan when we've got the big crisis here, we're wasting the moment. So I wonder how it would feel like right at that spot we're talking about, that we're only asking for $1.2 trillion, and it's before the third subtitle about greenbacks can supply such an emergency. If there could be one or two sentences, well, if there should be I'm proposing, it should mention that $1.2 trillion is a paltry amount, as Kevin is saying, compared to what the greenbacks were back in the day. But then, you know, making this money right now for this particular purpose and spending it still leaves the people of the United States in the position of begging. And I wonder if that wouldn't be an okay place to put a sentence like, well, by the way, you should know that there actually is already written a program that would take away the begging part of our money, and like one sentence naming and linking to the NEED Act. So have it be a small part, but not go unmentioned.
Rita Stack.
Rita.
You know, I already suggested that earlier, that we should put it in there. And I also suggested that Joe had come up with some estimates of the amount of money that would be involved to go to states for local uses or whatever. So.
Oh, right. That would be an important part of this letter too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, he's actually...
Will you be able to
resend
that for us all?
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to ask Eugene right now, again, I know I heard him say it before, but I wasn't thinking of it in terms of the populations of the city. So if he could say, when was Holyoke, Mass?
Jackson, Mississippi, and Stockton, California.
Jackson, right. Mississippi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Holyoke, uh-huh.
And what was the third one?
Stockton, California. Stockton. That's the initiator.
Okay.
300,000 people in Stockton.
Okay. I'll try to revise that up and get it into Rita to be able to use it to both, I mean, to Eugene and Rita.
Super cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sue, does that help you any as far as our strategy discussion, or what do you want to leave us with regarding strategy as we begin to say goodnight?
Well, I thought the discussion was, is the strategy just greenbacks, or is it going to be the three pillars?
Yeah. It doesn't sound to me like we're ready to make it.
Well, I think what our strategy is to suggest that the coalition of mayors get behind a movement to get some legislation passed that will clean up the monetary system. I mean, mean, isn't this, isn't this why we're taking it to the mayors? So they can get together and try to start a movement among mayors?
That's yes. My understanding.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, we need to put that in the letter at some point why we're writing this, you know.
Yeah.
That's my understanding. And my further understanding is that, you know, we can offer to do a presentation to their staff on Zoom or something else if they, you know, want more information from us.
So, Rita, let me just hear again. In the minutes, I want to put Eugene and Rita will rewrite the letter to. And what did you just say?
What did I say?
Using Joe's
we want to add Joe's numbers.
Need Act money to cities and other. I mean, the question of resolutions. I mean, mayors. I don't know if it's in the first letter, but you know, in the second letter, it's why don't you enact a resolution supporting greenbacks to do something? Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot of things, but they don't necessarily. I mean, I like Joe's part because I mean, it shows them that there is a law, a proposed bill already ready to go. Yeah. And it would lead to X amount of dollars for you as a city in Stockton. You know, real concrete stuff. Over.
And protect the future of your endeavor.
Right.
Okay, so it's going to, the NEED Act is going to be included in the strategy?
Yes.
In the cover letter.
Cover letter, yeah.
Okay.
And the strategy, right?
Sorry?
I said, and in the strategy.
I mean, that is sole purpose of us doing this is to try to get the monetary reform pushed through.
I hear you.
I mean, that's our underlying goal, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
So we have to let them know what it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And us, you know, and suggest to them that they, you know, form a coalition of mayors or whatever to pass resolutions to urge Congress to pass legislation in so that this can happen.
So. Super cool. Any more comments?
Thank you for Sarah showing up, and I hope she will consider in the future coming back. Over.
Yeah, I agree. Please.
I
hope you will join up.
Yes, I will. I'm actually fascinated. Thank you for letting me again be in on again. I'll be back. I'm just fascinated to hear everybody and this work that you're doing. So just, you know, if I'm quiet, I'm just trying to like really catch up on what everyone's been doing. That's why it sounds really great, to be honest. This is fantastic. I'm going to read the documents and what you guys have been working on so far. So I just want to like give myself time to be educated before I pipe up with questions or
that's
comments.
Okay. That's fine, Sarah. Glad to have you.
Thanks for your encouraging words. Mm-hmm.
So have you...
it's fantastic. You guys are so on it. The Green Party has all the great ideas. I hope everyone
can
really
understand. You're right.
But anyway.
So, Sarah, you said you had joined the Green Party. Have you hooked up with the Green Party of New York yet?
You know, I haven't done stuff locally. I really should. Because I know that there's a lot of stuff for us to do locally. I haven't hooked up with anyone particular locally,
You need to get in touch with the Green Party of California, Green Party of New York. So and ask them to appoint you to the committee, to our committee.
Oh, okay. I didn't know I had to do that.
That's how you join.
Okay.
You have to actually be a member of the Green Party of New York, and you have to request that they appoint you on this committee. And Sue has gone through that process.
So maybe
same way.
Okay,
I can,
gotcha.
So could you maybe mentor?
I had to do it last year, Sarah. It wasn't hard in Wisconsin.
Okay.
I joined on purpose to work on this committee. And so I just went to my local and my state and asked them to appoint me, and they said, okay, sure.
Yeah, Sue, can you maybe help her out with that?
Yeah, let me ask Sarah, what part of New York City do you live in?
I'm in Astoria, Queens.
Okay, because there's a Brooklyn local, there's a Manhattan local. I'm not sure about Queens.
That's fine, I'll just go to the Manhattan local. That's fine. Okay. My office is in Manhattan. I'm in Manhattan right now.
Okay. Just so you know, the local is not associated legally as part of the party. But it's your local people who are active. The county organization is the level at which you join the party at the grassroots, and then the county is connected to the state. So the state of New York, the Green Party of New York State, is composed of representatives from all the county organizations around New York State. But I'll find out about Queens, if there's a county organization for the Green Party of New York in Queens, and let you know.
I will send Sue's email to Sarah, and I will send Sarah's email to Sue.
Great.
So great. You guys can communicate better.
Thank you.
Joe Stack.
Thank you.
Hey, Joe
Stack.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I need to ask this question. Weren't we supposed to have some kind of help from the media group about if we needed to write a press release on something that somebody was going to be able to help us on that, or is that gone?
The only time that we need to do that is if we're putting out a press release on behalf of the national party, okay?
Okay.
If we put, I think our committee can put out a press release of our own.
Okay.
I can double check on that, maybe. I'll talk to David too then about it.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
If you're putting something out to the
good
public,
night. Good to see you, Will.
I think
I will.
We need the steering committee to approve it.
Rita, you're saying the steering committee to approve a press release?
Yeah, if we're going public with something, you know, so I guess maybe you talk to Howard about it. We went through this before because when he wanted to write the letter to AOC.
Oh, yeah. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Okay.
We may have to go through the national party, you know, which I hate to do because, you know, but anyway.
Oh, hey, I want to ask you, is Joe gone already?
Yes, let's quit the meeting, or at least I'm going to.
Okay, then.
Good night, everyone. Sarah, nice meeting.
Bye, everyone.
Good night. Okay, bye, everyone.
Unless we can talk about it later.
Slumber party.
Mary.
Yeah, slumber party.
Bye. Have a slumber party.
That's great.
Okay.
That's bye-bye. Great.
No, we are eligible for that.
No, thank you.
Oh, we got to have a laugh. Da 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 da
Mm-hmm.